You could have been a supporter of any football team. You could have been, you could have been, you could have been. You could have been following the champions of the Champions League. You could have been, you could have been, you could have been. What's all this stuff you're giving us? There's just one team for me, and that's the town where I come from. In Bromley, in Bromley, in Bromley, in Bromley, in Bromley, in Bromley, in Bromley. You could have been crammed inside a stage of 50,000.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Ravens Weekly for another instalment of the weekly Bromley FC podcast. My name is Matt Hall and I'm delighted to be joined these days by Josh Tindall. Josh, how are you? Look buzzing to be here.
Very good, very good.
It is the highlight of the week, isn't it, doing this podcast?
Yeah.
It's kind of like a, I don't know, it just, you look forward to it every week. And when you're doing it, it's just, oh, we love it, don't we? And we hope people enjoy listening to it.
It's just quality time with you, Matt.
I was going to say that, but I obviously didn't want everyone listening to, you know, to know about that. But maybe we can edit that part out later on.
Edit that out.
So let's get started then. Plenty coming up on the show today. And we start with the under-23s, as they had a game on Friday night preceding the match against Wrexham for the first team. And they beat Beaconsfield 1-0 with Bobby Unwin scoring the only goal in that one. Oh, I don't know what happened there.
We're recording at 9 o'clock in the morning. That's
we
why,
are. This is earlier than normal.
Usually it's about 5 o'clock.
This is earlier than normal. We're so organised this week.
We are.
I can't believe it.
It's because it's an away game, isn't it?
It is. That is true. Brimfield's actually had a St. Patrick's Day celebration earlier on during the day. Well, it started earlier on, didn't it? And it finished later that night. And that looked really great fun. Plenty of people getting involved in that one. And of course, Cheltenham was on as well. So plenty to keep people occupied. And a really successful day all round. So well done to the under-23s. And brilliant scenes in Brimfield's as well. Moving on, Josh. Now, I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this question, but have you ever experienced a more manic build-up to a game and a busier match day than that Wrexham game?
Yeah, it was a busy one, that's for sure.
Well, 5,027 in attendance at that one, including 937 Wrexham fans. It's a modern-day league record, which is absolutely exceptional. And I think that is worthy of a...
Yeah,
there we go. We've got these little toys now, haven't we, that we can use on this podcast. It's absolutely brilliant. I almost forgot, actually, so thanks for reminding me, Josh. But a brilliant day all round. Not the result we were after, but a really good performance, wasn't it?
True, but I think losing 2-1 to a team like Wrexham, I think we play really well, so... I'm not disappointed.
Obviously, a controversial moment, Omar Shami being pulled down in the box. You've seen the pictures going around on Twitter. It's a pen, isn't it?
It definitely is, yeah. And I know we've had a couple of those decisions go against us this season. And yeah, I think Omar's been on the receiving end of a few challenges like that. Was it Wrexham away where he had his shirt completely sort of torn off his shoulder?
And Reece Charles-Cook as well was actually pulled back in the build-up to that penalty at the race course back in January. I think you're right. I think we are unlucky. I mean, we spoke about before that we'd only had one penalty from the start of the season right up until the end of February, and then we had 3 in 2 games, which is unusual. We don't seem to get a rub of the green when it comes to that a lot of the time. And I think, strangely, it's been that way for a number of years, actually, from what I can remember. Looking at the pictures and seeing it, and the referee had a really good view of it as well. It's really disappointing to not be given that. I feel on the day, and actually, to the credit of the Wrexham fans, they recognise the performance of the Bromley team on the day. A young Bromley team as well. And we'll hear from Andy Woodman more on that later.
Yeah.
But it's great to see these youngsters, some of whom are from the academy and, you know, have come into the club as young players and developed here, go toe-to-toe against, you know, the best squad in the league and arguably a team which wouldn't be out of place in League One.
Well, yeah, and I think Mash put something on Twitter after the game, and there was 9 players in that squad that were 22 years or under, and not... they all play really well, like they always do. And I think when we played Notts County, we're coming up against brilliant National League players, whereas you're playing against Wrexham, you're playing against good sort of Football League players. It's a completely different level.
It's a completely different style as well, isn't it? You look at that Notts County game, they are probably the best footballing side, well, definitely the best footballing side in this league, and they can play you off the park. Wrexham just play to their strengths, don't they? There's nothing spectacular about them. The two goals, the second one in particular, a bit scrappy, but they just play to their strengths. They're good at knowing their jobs, each and every player on that field. It wasn't... I mean, it was a good game of football, but Bromley weren't blown away or outplayed by any stretch of the imagination.
No, it was a standard Hayes Lane performance, really. I think we did really well, and obviously we'll speak about it in a bit, but Deji was brilliant as well as his first start. And it was a good performance.
Well, let's come on to that then. Deji Ilerioway, of course, signing on loan from Charlton Athletic a couple of weeks ago, and played in that York City game, came on at the end. Obviously, it was a bit of a freak evening, that one, and a disappointing defeat. But started this game with Byron Webster out injured at the moment, and got a Man of the Match award, which I think was very fair. He kept Ollie Palmer pretty quiet. Again, another fantastic footballer, Ollie Palmer, a very
experienced player.
He shouldn't
be playing in this league either.
No, absolutely. Look at that front two that they've got. Yeah. But I feel Deji, at the age of 19, I cannot believe he's 19. At the age of 19, has got so much promise and so much potential. And what a nice guy as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all the players are nice here, but when Deji came, I remember Charlton rang me and they said, just give you a heads up, he'd probably be one of the nicest players that you deal with. So, yeah, I was buzzing for him.
He hates interviews, though.
Oh, he does. Yeah, but they all say that.
Yeah, they do. Also, Sam Long, with a debut in goal, obviously Reece Charles Cook being sent off against York City. His ban was due to take place away to FC Halifax Town. Obviously, with that game being called off, it carried over to the Saturday and the visit of Wrexham. What a game and a baptism of fire for Sam Long. But I felt that he coped with it very well.
Well, I mean, being a Lincoln fan myself, I know that last season he was chucked in, not a similar environment, but Plymouth away as a Lincoln fan, it's not a great place to go. And I remember our keeper was injured and Sam Long was chucked straight in. We won 2-1. He played well. Obviously, he went off to Ireland, played well again. And yeah, I think he thrives on it, considering he's 20 years old and, like, obviously had the Wrexham fans behind him in the second half, and it's a difficult environment to make your club debut.
It is indeed, isn't it? And fair play to Sam Long. Really composed performance overall, and I know a lot of the fans were quite impressed. Just touching again on the day itself, we had two fans come all the way from San Francisco to support us.
Mental.
Crazy, isn't it? We are global. I know Wrexham are very much global, but so are we, right? So are we.
We're massive everywhere we go.
We've got fans across
it's
the world.
It's in the song, Matt.
It is, absolutely. Well, thank you to those two for coming over and for their support. It's absolutely phenomenal. And it's really, really good to see. Just before we finish on the whole Wrexham thing, it's been interesting watching their transfer movements this week, hasn't it? Billy Walters coming in from Barrow, the striker, and one Ben Foster, former Man United goalkeeper, actually spent time on loan at Wrexham in the mid-2000s when he first started his career. But it's an outrageous signing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, it's his former club and He did say that he's not getting paid that much being there. And obviously, from the outside, you'd probably think that he's on quite a bit of money because of how it's been sort of distributed at the club and stuff. But it's another weird one. But
well, it's funny, actually. Not funny, but we talk about, on the commentary, we spoke about Rob Layton and the fact that in his past three visits to Hayes Lane, or three or four visits, he has gone off injured during the game and not been able to continue. Obviously, the first two were quite serious, particularly the first one during COVID, an ambulance was required and so on. It happened last year as well. And then it happened unexpectedly this year. He sort of just went off at half time and didn't come back out.
Well, I thought it was a psychological thing, because I know that I think he didn't give the ball away, but he was a bit shaky at one moment. Then obviously Callum Reynolds tried to score from the halfway line, and I think it looked like he wasn't completely switched on, and I didn't know if it was like a psychological thing of sort of being back to the place where it hasn't gone well for him. And when he got subbed off at half time, so there was no real indication in the first half that he was injured. It was a weird one, but yeah, I just hopefully another speedy recovery for him, but he's not having much luck here.
No, and obviously it's never nice to see a player go off injured, so we wish him for the third time the very best of luck in his recovery. And of course, best of luck to Wrexham for the rest of the season. Moving on from that one then, we had some further good news on Saturday, didn't we, with one of our JPL sides, Josh?
Yeah, they won their league, the under-16 girls. So Harry Honour, who was on the podcast last week, him and his girls have won the league. They beat Ryslip 5-1 away from home. And Rosie Rowe and Esme Johnson bagged braces, while Freya Solkud also scored.
Brilliant. Well, you can catch more on that one on the website. But we did give them a shout out on the stadium PA at half time. I know the coaches and quite a few of the girls were actually in the stadium watching the game. So congratulations to the team there, Harry, Les, all of the coaches, all of the players, all of the parents and volunteers and everyone that's involved. Congratulations for winning the Scion League. That's the JPL under 16 girls team.
Well, it's now time for our first guest on the podcast, and we were delighted to welcome Steve earlier today. Steve works for Ronin Marketing, who are a loyal sponsor and partner of Bromley FC, and are the reason behind our club mascot, Ronin the Raven. Matt caught up with him earlier, and here's what they had to say.
Steve from Ronin Marketing, welcome to Ravens Weekly. First of all, you came in, and you're another person that likes our setup in here.
Very nice. Yes, thank you, Matt. Yes, it's very high tech. Very high tech.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. It's fantastic. And thank you so much for taking the time out to join us today. So we're here to talk about Ronin Marketing, your company, who've been partners of the club for quite a few years. And we'll get onto that in a moment. But firstly, can you give us an outline of how Ronin Marketing came about and what services you provide?
Yeah, sure. So Ronin was 21 years old last year. And I set it up in my back bedroom shortly after I ran out of road with my employer, and my options were being narrowed. And I happened to get a really good contract with a man who became a very good friend of mine, and the company grew from there. Now we're based in E Street in Bromley. We've got a team of very, very talented young people who are specialists in lots of different marketing disciplines. And I think what customers like is that they can get everything from us in-house. So if you want a rebrand or a new website, or you want us to run communication, social media, then we've got some very clever young people in-house that can do that for you.
And you must be very, very proud of how far the company's come in that 21 plus years.
Pride is a dangerous thing. I think I'm very pleased with the way we've been able to develop good talent, attract good young people into the business, help them with their careers, and then release them into the wild, if you like. Mm-hmm. I'm very happy with the team we've got, the people that we've helped. Clients and employees, and the quality of the work that we do. A lot of our clients have been with us for 10, 15 years or more, so that probably tells you something.
Absolutely, and so does the length of the partnership that you've had here at the club, but we'll talk about that a little bit more in a second. Just on a personal note, was it always marketing for you that you were going to go into?
Yeah, I started in publishing, sales and marketing, and I found out I was quite good at it, and I was in publishing for 20 years, and then set up my own company. So yeah.
The partnership with the club has been here for quite a few years now. Do you want to tell us a bit about how that came about and the doors that it's opened? I guess for both organisations, it's been a fantastic partnership so far.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's our seventh season as a sponsor, and a guy called Chris Rogers, who was the sales person at the club at the time, rang me out of the blue, just got cold called me. And he was very good. You know, as a marketing company, you like to think you know a little bit about marketing. And for us, you know, we're a a marketing company that works for businesses, and having a sign up on the side of the pitch is, you know, never say never, but it's unlikely the people in the crowd are going to say, oh, I must give them a ring to sort out my social media. And Chris kind of tapped into that, and he offered us the sponsorship of the club mascot and the junior section, the kids. And I think what really appealed to me about that was the fact that the kids and the Raven would be around in the Glades and in schools. And so it wasn't just match day. It was, you know, out and about. And I think it sort of set the tone for us, because ever since, our sponsorships have been about the broader community, broader Bromley community. So not just helping the club, but, you know, bringing the kids into the football club. And in, I think it's 2019, we were asked to sponsor the new ladies recreational side, the Bromley Bells. And that, I think that was the World Cup year, actually. And that's been fantastic for us. And of course, it was before the big rise in ladies football. I think we're really pleased to be part of that, and now to see that growing within the club. So for me, I get great pleasure out of the kids joining the club and the ladies football. And most recently, we've sponsored the bins at Bromley. So you might say our sponsorship is rubbish, but that's about the recycled cups that everyone has their pint of beer in on match day. And again, it's a sustainability thing, which, you know, it's a community thing as well as a football club thing. So I kind of like the quirky little sponsorships. It suits me.
And that's what strikes me about your partnership with the club, is it's not just to advertise the company, it's to make an impact on the community, which is exactly what you're doing in all of the things that you've just mentioned there.
Thank you. Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's great to come to the games, and we meet up with the other sponsors, and, you know, there's a group of like-minded people. But yeah, I like the fact that we can contribute more than just a few quid to the club. I think it's more proactive than that. And again, that appeals to me.
We have to talk about Ronan the Raven. You mm-hmm. mentioned him just a minute ago. In terms of a mascot, you can't get a better name than that, surely.
Well, it's funny because when we first took that sponsorship, we started to call him Ronan the Raven. And I said, look, guys, you can't do that. That's taking a liberty. It's, you know, it's Raven is the mascot. But then the club started calling him Ronan the Raven. So, and of course, we're now, there's no way we can back out of that sponsorship, is there? It's there forever. So yeah, it's brilliant, Ronan the Raven. And seeing him at Wembley when the guys lifted the trophy was fantastic.
And just touching on that, aside from being a partner, you've become a supporter of the club and someone who embraces that match day experience and getting behind the team.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, the standard of football is really good. The team are really fit. You know, and we keep nudging those playoff places. And obviously the investment in the club has been fantastic. So, yeah, you know, I come down to watch the game whenever I can. I still play hockey, although I'm of mature years now. So that does take precedence, because you never know when your last game's going to be. But if I'm not playing hockey, then I'll be here to watch the football.
And we always talk about when we speak to sponsors, it's a sponsorship and partnership family here, isn't it, really? And all of the things you talk about there, it's a lot broader, isn't it, than what might meet the eye from someone on the outside?
Yeah, I think so. It's one of the few places where business owners congregate, you know, on a regular basis, and obviously they all like football. I assume they do, but you know, you might have 20, 30, 40, 50, I don't know how many people in the room, and you've got something in common as well as the football. You're a business owner. It's a really nice network to be part of.
You've talked about how your partnership with the club has developed over the past few years, and how the company itself has developed. What's next? What's in the pipeline? What's the future for this partnership and for Ronan?
Well, we've already said that we're going to renew our sponsorship for the next season, and I'm always interested. The good thing about working with the commercial team at Bromley. So Emma, Max, and Mick have been really proactive, and before them Jeff, and they keep coming up with good ideas, which sometimes I find it difficult to resist. But I think they've got the measure of me now, and they know what's going to appeal to me. So I'm always on the lookout for other ways that I can, you know, help the club and help my business at the same time.
We have to touch on Wembley. You mentioned it briefly just there, both from a commercial angle in terms of seeing Ronan the Raven there was fantastic, but also more broadly the day itself and what it meant for the football club and everybody involved, including the likes of yourself.
Yeah, disappointingly, he says, I was in Barcelona on holiday. I mean, how terrible. But I couldn't come to the game. But we were tuned in, and I think the result came through just as we were getting on the plane. So we were able to celebrate with a glass of something on the flight back. But there are lots of pictures of us around Barcelona with the Bromley scarves draped around statues, and we were walking around in our Bromley shirts. So probably, yes, we were the Spanish contingent of the Bromley Supporters Club that day.
Brilliant to hear. Finally, you know, you've been a consistent member of that family, like you say, for the past 7 or so years. And it's fair to say, isn't it, that the club has developed a lot in that time, and it continues to go places, which for yourself must be brilliant as a partner.
Yeah, it's great to see. I mean, when I first came here, it was very, very different. It's a fantastic setup. For me personally, I enjoy coming, but when you see the facilities for the players, it's unbelievable. And now we've got the restaurant and the Broomfields restaurant, which means it's not just about match day. You can come along, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and watch Premiership football on the TV. I imagine as a player, it must be a real draw to have these facilities, which I've not been to every club in the country, but I can't imagine there are too many National League sides with this kind of facility.
Steve, it's been such a pleasure having you on the podcast today. Thank you for your time. Have you enjoyed it?
I have, yes. Thank you very much, Matt. My pleasure.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Moving on, it's time for Community Corner. And this week, we've got two very, very special guests that we've interviewed. The first one is someone who might not be known to people outside of the Community Trust, but is certainly known so well by all of the participants, all of the staff at the club, in the Community Trust, and he is just an absolute top man all round. And his name is Malcolm Bone. He was our first ever Community Trust volunteer. He works with us 2 or 3 days a week, just volunteering his services to support the coaches and do various other things. But I'm going to let him tell the story here. Here's Malcolm Bone. Well, we've got a VIP here on Ravens Weekly today. We're delighted to be joined by the first ever, the pioneer of volunteering at the Bromley Football Club Community Sports Trust, and that is Malcolm Bone. Malcolm, welcome to Ravens Weekly.
Thank you very much.
You've come into the room. We ask a lot of people this because we're still so excited and the novelty definitely hasn't worn off yet. You like our setup in here, don't you?
I absolutely love the setup in here. This is a first for me. But again, it's just a privilege to be here, as I've said to everybody in the bar.
Well, it's a privilege to have you here, Malcolm. So let's talk a bit about, I mean, I remember very well when you first started volunteering with us. How did you get involved with the club here?
Well, initially it started when I inquired about the availability of walking football. And then I mentioned to you that did they have any opportunities for volunteers? And the answer was not specifically at that time, but obviously come along to see you and Sue at the time to talk through what I could offer to help in any way to the club. And it just sort of just developed from there. And at that time, of course, obviously the club wasn't like it is today. This was when everyone was in their porter cabins, et cetera, et cetera. So I would like to think I joined at the right time from a personal point of view, because if you look at the club now, I mean, it's just beyond recognition from what it was like when I first come here a couple of years ago. And then after talking with you, it's a matter of what could I do? I was happy to basically do anything that was required. The only criteria I had at the time was, after spending 40 odd years working in the city and working in an office, I always wanted to be outside. that was really the only sort of criteria that I applied at the time.
And we keep you on your toes, don't we, here? I know very well what, exactly what you get involved with and what you provide for the Community Trust, but just, can you give our listeners a bit of background on what you do on a weekly basis?
Yeah, well, it's basically three elements, I guess. One is obviously on a Monday and a Thursday regularly. I'm here on a Thursday for the Ravens chat to help with that, which, again, is a total privilege for me. I mean, I obviously came here initially just to help, but now I wouldn't miss it for the world to actually be a part of it. I mean, as everybody knows at the club, I mean, the characters that you meet at that, at the Ravens chat, it's just fantastic to be amongst those people. So that's certainly not a hardship. It's a pleasure to be with them all. And then on Thursday afternoons, you would go and help at the soccer camps for the local schools, after school clubs, and do that on a Monday. So that's the 2 days of the week when you're sort of regularly here. But then, of course, you have two other elements. One is for the half-term and summer-term soccer camps, when you get involved assisting the coaches and basically, again, just help them out. Obviously, the take-up from the kids that turn up for these things never ceases to amaze me how many people come here. So you help out, again, you know, whatever you want to do, run a little session with them, maybe, depending on the availability of the normal coaches here. And then also the walking football, which is, I've been playing walking football for a few years now. And then that started around about a year ago, again, unbelievably. We started down at Bromley. And then you sort of basically was asked if I wouldn't mind running a session so the coaches could be freed up to do other things. And again, absolutely no problems helping with that. And it's twofold. One, it's you're keeping playing yourself, which is the most important thing. But again, you're just, it's part of just the enjoyment of getting to being associated with the club. And I know from experience and talking to the people now, given it's been a year, what a godsend for everybody that plays, how much they enjoy it. And it's just another element of what they do at Bromley within a community trust. And it will just continue to grow and grow, there's no doubt.
And there's a great group of guys at the moment who are doing the walking football. Plans are in place to launch a women's walking football and other things further down the line. But it is a great bunch that we've got up there at the minute, and it's part of the furniture on a Friday afternoon now.
It certainly is between 4 and 5 o'clock, and we discovered the other week that we can actually get on the pitch a little bit earlier now. So we try and get on about 3:45 now and see it through till 5 o'clock. Because, you know, no matter what age you are, I mean, it's totally irrelevant. People still love their football. So it's, yeah. Everybody who participates, I know how much they really enjoy it.
Just going to say, if anybody is interested in joining that group, it's still possible, isn't it? They can find out more at bromleyfc.org. And it's a fiver per session. You can turn up and pay cash, or you can commit for the season, as we call it. But just moving away from walking football slightly, you received, because we nominated you as a fully deserving volunteer, the National League Volunteer of the Month Award. A few months back. It was very well deserved, I must say. And it was a bit of a surprise. I know your daughter, who is halfway across the world, got quite excited about it.
She certainly did. Yeah, she can't be much further away because she's in Australia. So, but yes, I mean, I went viral.
Yeah, you did, didn't you?
Which, you know, to a 30-year-old daughter, it was very, you know, she did find it very funny. But it was such a genuine surprise. Honestly, and yeah, again, it was just something. It was, because it is a pleasure to be here, then it's nice to get the recognition, never ever deny that, of course. But it was just a total surprise that one, you'd been actually put forward for it. And the National League, I thought it was a local type award, I didn't even realize it was actually the Vanarama award across the whole of the division. So when I took stock of that, I must be honest, it was very humbling.
Yeah. Well, it's very well deserved, I must say.
Thank you.
You are a real part of the furniture here, and you've got a cult hero status amongst the coaches. You're known as Big Malk. What would you say about the team of coaches that you work with on a weekly basis?
Well, again, seriously, I mean, just use the word pleasure. I mean, it gets boring in the end, but it is just an absolute pleasure to work with them. I mean, they've got all different ages, obviously much, much younger than me, of course, but you've got a whole spectrum of ages that are there, some just starting out. Some have been around that little bit longer, but I just welcome you in genuinely. It's not a situation when you're sort of, Malcolm's here, let's find something to do. It's nothing like that at all. It is, you're an active member with them. And they just always welcome you. And the same thing applies like today. Obviously, this is a Thursday when we're doing this after the Ravens chat. It's just when you're dealing with the odd person who's here on that side, then it's just fantastic, I've got to say. And long may it continue, you know, because the whole club is just going to be developing along with the community trust and just be nice to be part of it, basically.
Ravens chat is a special group, isn't it? And, you know, we started this. You were there from the very beginning.
We were a year ago, unbelievably.
That's right, yeah, as a result of the impact of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. From your perspective, as someone that sees these guys and these girls every week, what's your thoughts on the impact that it's made on lives?
Oh, just absolutely massive. I think when you talk to the guys and the girls, you can just tell. I mean, they all come in smiling anyway, which is always a plus, but they certainly leave with an even bigger smile when they come in. They've got that camaraderie amongst themselves. I mean, they're great fun to be with. As you well know, of course, a lot of them support the club. So that's an extra added element. And then you get people coming in, obviously like the manager or the assistant manager, making their presence known to them. And they'll spend some time with them, which I know, again, is invaluable to them. And this, I know it's, you know, almost a cliche now with the mental health and everything else and mental health awareness, but you can just tell. Particularly the newer members who have come in. I mean, some of them we know have been here from day one, but as time's gone on, there's more and more members coming in. And you can just tell that they just wouldn't miss it for the world. You can just tell that when they come in. I mean, if you ever took it away, you know, I don't know what would happen, to be honest with you. But it's just great fun. You know, it's a couple of hours. I mean, let's be honest, if we could accommodate them for 5 hours, they would be here for 5 hours. From that point of view. Now, and also particularly through the summer months when there's no football. I mean, that's going to be, obviously, they've still got their football on the weekends and during midweek games, but obviously during the summer, then, of course, obviously, what will they be doing? So they're going to want to attend that even more because it keeps them in touch with their colleagues. Some we know, they've got their friends they see regularly anyway outside of this, but there's still a lot of them. Again, I'm convinced it's just going to be invaluable. And it's growing and growing. I mean, the numbers, we get a very steady number now. Sometimes you get more, sometimes you get less, but of course that goes with the territory, doesn't it? So the nature of what it is.
And of course, a huge thank you to Rotary Clubs in Bromley for continuing to support Ravens Chat. They make it possible. Just as someone who's been involved, you are our first ever community volunteer, and you'll hold that forever.
Thank you.
What's your thought? You've worked across, I mean, you've worked with the youngest participants right up to the oldest. Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts on just after our second birthday, the impact of the community trust on the Bromley Borough community at this point?
Oh, again, from my experience there, I mean, there's absolutely no doubt how integral it is to Bromley itself as an area. It's one of the biggest boroughs in London, if not the biggest. So there's a big audience out there that would need the help that the football club offers. And there's absolutely no doubt that it does. And you can see by recent announcements coming through where there's more and more companies get involved with the club, which is a credit again to them, because people wouldn't want to be associated with a club if they didn't feel they were going in the right direction, both from the physical side of it, of the football club, but the community trust specifically is what it offers to the community. Again, regardless of age, there can be very, very young people who have problems as well as older people. It doesn't go sort of necessarily that, oh, as you get older, you're going to need this more. In actual fact, still get in the situation post-pandemic where you're getting the younger generation still struggling on the back of all of this stuff. So just invaluable. And to say, because the borough is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, in London, then there's a big audience out there that need as much help as we can offer them, basically.
Well, Malcolm, it's really good to hear that. And obviously, as someone who's involved and has been since the start, thank you so much for all of your invaluable support.
Okay, well, you really are
an important part of it. And
thank you.
And I hope you feel that.
Oh, well, I just love being here. You know, it's abundantly clear when I'm around, I just really enjoy it. Certainly not a hardship. And long may it continue. That's the trick.
Absolutely. Well, you are a credit to the Community Trust, Malcolm.
Thank you
once again for your support. And thank you for joining us on Ravens Weekly.
My absolute pleasure. Thanks ever so much, mate. Thank you.
Well, I love doing that interview. Josh, you know Malcolm as well from, you know, being around the place.
Big Malk.
Big Malk, as
Big
he's known.
Big Malk.
He's called Big Malk because he's a big character.
Yes.
And he's just a gentleman, isn't he?
He is. Every time I see him, he's smiling. He loves being here.
He does. And hopefully that came across in the interview, but it was great to have him here. I'm not having him saying that he's never done an interview before. He's definitely had experience of this. He was great, wasn't he, in the interview chair. But thank you to Malcolm for all of his efforts and all of his hours and, you know, everything that he puts into the Community Trust. Organisations like us, you know, charities, third sector organisations rely on the goodwill of volunteers, and Malcolm is certainly up there as one of the best. And we thank him for his service once more. Somebody that Malcolm has worked with in our Ravens Chat project, and somebody that will be known to pretty much every Bromley supporter and probably everyone listening to this, Mr. Roy Oliver, or should I say Sir Roy Oliver? You know, when he came into the room to do this interview...
Tesco bag.
That's it, with the Tesco bag. He's got a new one now as well, so he's got the Tesco bag, and he's got a bag with his name and a Bromley crest pressed into it. A nice fabric tote bag, it's lovely.
Brilliant.
You know, when he came into the room, we all stood, didn't we, as he entered... Did. And until he took his seat, and then we took our seats after him. But he is something of royalty in the fan base. There we go. Do you see what I did there?
That's a title.
There we go. Done. It's decided. There we go. That's the title. Usually we sit here after we finish the episode and think, what can we call this episode? But we've just got it. There we go.
Got it there.
We're getting into a rhythm here, Josh.
Come on.
But it was brilliant to have Roy, and we're delighted that... well, actually, I'll let Roy reveal it. We've got some good news regarding Roy to come. And here's our little sit-down with Roy Oliver and what he had to say. This podcast is just full of VIPs today. We've got another one here. This man is no stranger to any Bromley supporter. He's a VIP. He's a legend. There are so many superlatives to describe this man. He is, of course, the one and only Roy Oliver. Roy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Matt.
Nice to have you on. Are you pleased to be here?
Very pleased, very pleased.
So we're going to talk about a bit of exciting news that you're going to be bringing us in a little bit. But first and foremost, you've just finished Ravens Chat. Now, you're one of the founding members and one of the inspirations behind Ravens Chat. Can you just tell us about, you know, in the past year, we've been going just over a year, how it has helped to support you?
Oh, I think it's brilliant. You know, it's grown and grown and grown, and now we're getting more and more people coming along who are absolutely enjoying it, and it's especially aimed at people over 50 years old. And it's just a 2 hours of rambling about rubbish usually, but it's great fun. We all get on so well together, and it's growing and growing all the time.
And it is particularly important, isn't it, for people that live on their own, and especially during COVID, might have struggled with the isolation.
Absolutely, yeah. So many people out there are living by themselves or don't have much contact with people. So it's a real blessing for people to come along and just mingle with friends, because we're all friends at Ravens Chat, and it's very great, yeah.
Let's move on then, Roy. Let's talk a bit about you. Now, as I said in the intro, a vast, vast majority of Bromley supporters will know you and will associate you with the Tesco bag and the Golden Goals. And, of course, you're in the Bromley Boys, which we'll talk about in a minute. But do you want to tell everyone just briefly about how you started supporting Bromley and how long you've been following the Ravens for?
Well, I first came down in the middle 50s with my father, because my nan used to be in the old... John Freeney stand, which was the wooden stand. She used to do the teas and the Bob Rules for the supporters. So my dad used to bring me down there, sometimes at half time, because you could get in for nothing then. I don't remember too much of the games. There was a lot of muddy games that I remember, and big crowds. And then I didn't sort of come for a few years, and then 1960, I think I watched all the home games. I didn't go to one away game. And then from 61 to, I started going to a few. And then 62, 3, I started going to more and more every season.
You've seen a fair bit, haven't you?
Yeah.
Over the years. Yeah. There's what I always say about Roy is what he doesn't know about Bromley Football Club isn't worth knowing. You've got a mass of archives and newspaper cuttings, and you're just telling me about it when we came in here, that you're sorting through it all, and actually we're going to put that to some good use. But just how much Bromley Football Club stuff do you have at home?
A tremendous lot of stuff. When we before we brought out the centenary book in 1992, no one had ever researched the results or league tables from the 1890s for about the first 10 years. So I spent months in the libraries, driving my wife around the bend completely, spending like a whole afternoon in there or something, you know, but just gathering up, going through each season and trying to pick out bits and pieces of tours and special matches, cup finals, etc. And I'm sorting through it at the moment. I'm sort of getting lots of folders done up.
You're going to need a lot of them. I mean, to be honest, we're going to use some of that and we'll talk about that in a moment. But I just wanted to touch on something. A lot of people will also associate you with the Bromley Boys, of course, written by the late, great Dave Roberts, who was another legend in the Bromley fan base. That must have been a great experience for you to kind of have your story told a little bit along with the other two Bromley Boys, Derek and Peter. How was that experience for you? First of all, the book and then following on the film.
Well, I mean, we never dreamed of anything like this, and then Dave Roberts wrote the book with these crazy nutters in it, watching his football team what never won a match. I mean, 69-70, which the film is based on, we only won three league games, and we were there every game on the coaches. And we used to have two old ladies called the Peters sisters, and they would sit in the front seats every away game, all the home games. There used to be four of them when they first started off. Apparently, they saw the first amateur cup final in 1911.
Wow.
Their father took them along to it. But, for years, it was just two of them, like, you know. But it was great fun. And you learn a lesson about football's not always about winning. It's sometimes you have to lose gracefully. And I think most football supporters will say, as long as your team gives you 100% and they're passionate about it, you can't go far wrong, irrespective of the result. Sometimes you think that you're hard done by, but sometimes the season levels it up a bit, you know. As the great Bill Shankly said, to win a championship, you will win matches you don't deserve to win, you'll lose matches you should have won, but it's what you do over the 38, 42, 46 games of the season.
Very wise words there, Roy. And one thing I will say is that however bad it gets and however bad newer supporters think it gets on winless runs and whatnot, you've seen a lot worse, haven't you?
Oh, definitely, yes. And that's where you learn to stick with your club. I've spoken to a lot of youngsters, why are you supporting Bromley? And they said, you make friends. But something more important than that, I said, you find somewhere where you belong, because everyone knows each other and everyone's such friendly. And I think that is so important to clubs like Bromley.
It's a real community here, isn't it?
Yeah,
you've been
much.
Part of that since, day one, and it continues to grow.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is all a dream. If someone had written a book about this 10 years ago, they'd probably been locked up. How the community trust has grown, how the football club, you know, has grown, we are a professional club now.
Right, we're going to be, the good news is, I'm sure lots of people will be very happy to hear you on the podcast, but the good news is it's not going to be a one-off, is it? We've got a few bits in front of us, some historic photos we've talked about. There's some photos of the old ground there, which are brilliant photos of us playing Crystal Palace, I believe.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
And you're going to be coming on the podcast now on Ravens Weekly on a regular basis to talk about the history of the club.
Yes, absolutely. I've got many, many stories at home and I can have a pile of stuff.
Well, Roy, you're going to be a regular co-presenter then, if you like. It's all signed, sealed and delivered. You'll be joining us again, won't you, to go on to the first, what we're going to call History Corner of the Ravens Weekly podcast, delivered by Roy Oliver, the man himself. And there's nobody better to do it. But Roy, we really look forward to that. And thank you for coming on today. We can't wait to see you again next week.
Thank you very much, Matt. Thank you very much.
Well, two interviews there that were such a pleasure to do. I mean, they all are, but these two guys, you know, really big parts of the furniture in different ways here at the football club, and really, really pleased to have them on the podcast. I know Malcolm will be back, and obviously you will have heard in that episode that Roy will be joining us on a regular basis. Roy's going to have his own little segment, if you like, on the podcast.
What's it going to be called, though?
Royalty? I don't know. I don't know. That's something we've got to come up with. Damn it, Josh, you're giving us more work here.
Whoever's listening, if you've got like a little, you know.
If you've got a suggestion,
yeah,
tweet us or comment on the social posts when the podcast goes out, and let us know what your thoughts are. What should Roy Oliver's podcast segment be called? Bearing in mind it will be around the history of the football club. And as we said in the interview, what Roy doesn't know about Bromley Football Club is not worth knowing. Moving on, we had some good news, didn't we, Josh, regarding one of our players receiving a call-up of sorts.
Yeah, we had James Vennings called up to the England C team, and they played Wales on Tuesday at Altrincham, and Venno played the last 15 minutes, and yeah, it's a...
They won, didn't they? 1-0.
They did, yeah.
Excellent stuff, and congratulations to James. It's absolutely brilliant to see. I think it's fully deserved as well, you know, the performances that he's put in on a consistent basis since he came here on loan. So, yeah, fair play to James. Congratulations. There's been some brilliant pictures going around of James in the England training gear, and it's brilliant to see.
And, Michael Cheek last year.
Yes, it was, and Jack Holland before him as well a few years ago.
Has Frankie Raymond done it as well?
Oh, good question.
No, Josh Reese has.
Josh Reese, yes.
Yeah.
Anyway. Moving on. We've got another guest on the podcast. We're just churning out the guests in this episode. And the next one is Charlie Kendall. Now, Charlie joined on loan from Lincoln City at the end of January. And it's fair to say that he's made quite the impression here at Hayes Lane since moving in. So we sat down with him to discuss his move here and all things around it, as well as his past career. Charlie Kendall, welcome to the Ravens Weekly Podcast. Great to have you with us this afternoon. So just looking back at your time so far, we'll start with the more recent events. You returned from an injury on Saturday. How does it feel to be back?
Yeah, I'm delighted to be back. I mean, it was only a small injury, just with a little dead calf. But sometimes if you don't treat them right, they can be quite bad. So a couple of weeks out, back into training last week. Yeah, I feel really good. Much better than being stuck inside watching training from the window, and I'm back on the pitch, and I'm loving it again, so yeah, it's going good.
It's brilliant to see you back. Let's rewind now to the very beginning of your footballing journey, if you like, and as a young kid, how did you get into football, and kind of who were your idols growing up?
Well, as a kid, just as any footballer really, I think you just grow up with a ball at your feet, just going down the park with your parents, brothers, just kicking it about, kind of just having a bit of fun. And it got to the age of about six. I think I was about six. Well, I was playing way before that, but I think you're only allowed to join a team when you're about six. So I joined just a local team at that age. And yeah, it just kind of kicked on from then. I loved every minute of it, and just enjoyed playing football all the time. So I started from quite young. So, I just love playing football. So,
any particular players at the time that you were looking up to, modelling your game on at all?
I was probably too young to even know what was going on back then. But as I grew up, I had the likes of Cristiano Ronaldo. He was probably my whole childhood growing up, even into my teens. He was probably the standout one and the one that I looked up to the most. But then I've got people like Sergio Aguero, growing up watching him. Even like Thierry Henry, that was probably a little bit before. So as I got older, watching older videos of players like him who were a bit before my time. Even people like Alan Shearer, again, I was probably too young to watch him and know what was going on. But as I got older, really appreciate what he was doing as a professional. And more modern, got a good look in for like people like Luis Suarez when he was at Liverpool. Obviously followed him when he went to Barcelona, and any striker really around the Premier League that I could watch really.
Brilliant. during your time at QPR as a youngster, how did you find that as an experience, getting into the game and starting to get towards that professional level?
Yeah, well, I came into the academy system fairly late. I was about 14 when I got picked up by QPR, so I was just playing Sunday League up until 14, which probably for me benefited me because I was just able to grow up playing football as I wanted, with no like hardcore coaching or being told what to do here, what to do there. I kind of just went out and just enjoyed playing football every Sunday, which was good, and I really found what I was good at from like a raw point of view. So but yeah, ended up at QPR when I was 14. That was good. I was really happy with the club that I'd gone to and the way that it had all happened. I tried really hard. I had quite a long trial with them. It was about, well, they say normally it's about 6 weeks, but mine was probably about 3 months. So it took a while, but eventually when I signed for QPR, it was a really good feeling to kind of kickstart that dream of being a professional footballer.
And moving on a bit from then and your experiences in men's football, it was at your hometown club, Eastbourne Borough, where you really began to make your name in the men's game. How important was that spell? I know you had a few spells there, actually. How important were they for you? You had plenty of goals in all of them.
Yeah, so I think I went on loan to Eastbourne Borough in 2019, I think it was. And from then onwards, it kind of just set something off inside me that kind of just said, right, this is what I want to do, and like, this is how it's meant to be. You're meant to be fighting for 3 points every Saturday. No disrespect to academy football, it's really good, but at the end of the day, you're not playing with a team of players who have families, who are fighting for their bonuses, who have got a lot on the line for the 3 points on a Saturday. So being exposed to that early-ish was massive for me, and it kind of lit a spark inside me that kind of just made me even more hungry and me even more like driven to try and make it to the top.
And as Matt said, Eastbourne's your local team. How proud were you to represent your home team?
Oh yeah, it's class. I mean, I played for them as a little boy, going to like soccer schools and stuff. So, and all my family's from down there, so it was really special for me to be able to say that I played for them and really helped that team. So yeah, I'm really proud of.
And you caught the eye of many teams in higher divisions, including Lincoln City. How did that move come about?
It's tough to say, really. I was just enjoying football at the time. I wasn't letting myself get too high or too low during the games whilst I was at Eastbourne Borough. And I think the main reason why I got spotted and picked up by Lincoln City was just because of how much fun I was having at Eastbourne Borough. Massive credit to that club, because they helped me find a enjoyment again in football, and scoring a lot of goals probably helped a little bit. So yeah, I'm really happy with how it panned out, and I was really pleased at the time, the January transfer window last year, to make the move.
And it also meant moving away from home. How was that for you?
Well, I've been living away from home since I was probably about 15, so it's not really too big of an issue for me, but I've never moved so far away from home that I barely get to come back. So that's a little bit more difficult, knowing that I can't just jump in the car on a day off and come home, but it's all part of the game, and I know that if I want to make it to the very top, I'm going to have to move to places where I possibly won't be able to come home. And all my family are so supportive. They understand the sacrifices that I need to take to make it, and they do nothing but help me along the way.
And you made your debut for Lincoln back in August at Doncaster, and you scored on your debut. How was that?
Yeah, that was good. I think at the time I didn't know whether I was going to be in and amongst the team or or not, kind of in and out. But the gaffer and the club put their faith in me just to jump straight in. And I had a good game, scored, as you said. And, yeah, it was really good to get kind of straight off the mark, because the boys up there are really, like, we're quite close so already. So for me to go in and score on my debut, the boys were buzzing and I was buzzing, and it was just a really good feeling.
You then moved to Sutton on loan before being recalled, and then you were sent back out on loan here. What were your first impressions of Hayes Lane?
Yeah, I mean, I was. We spoke about it before when I first joined, but I was really surprised with all the facilities and stuff. I think it's like a top class facilities. The boys are really good here. They're a great bunch of boys. They really made me feel welcome when I came through the door. Even the gaffer, assistant, all the staff, even down to the kit man, they all made me feel really welcome. The physio sorted me out on the first couple of days, helped me settle in, so I really felt welcome in this place.
You touched there on the management team, and of course Andy Woodman at the forefront of that. How have you found working with him and the other coaching staff?
Yeah, it's been really good. I'm still young, but I've had a few managers to work under, and the gaffer, don't like to call him Andy Woodman, but he's gaffer to me. Yeah, he's class. I think his character is a good character. He understands his players well, and he knows when to have a laugh and knows when to be serious. But on a game day, he's really got that fighting spirit in him to really want to win every single game, and I admire that and appreciate that. So for me to go out and play for him, play for the staff, and play for myself is a really good feeling.
You talk about your relationships with the other players there, and it seems that you've settled into that really well. How's the mood in the camp at the moment at this business end of the season, as they call it?
Well, obviously, all the boys they're really determined. Even me, even all, like from the keeper all the way up to the strikers, even the people on the bench. We all want to be at the top. And at the moment, we're not. But all the boys have all got a fighting spirit. They've all got means to do well in their careers, even now. So we're all trying to stick at it. We're all trying to fight. We all know what we need to do. And we're all going to give it our best.
You've come into the team, and as a young striker, looking up to the likes of Adam Marriott and Michael Cheek, two prolific scorers at this level and two of the best natural finishers I've ever seen. It must be brilliant to be able to work alongside them and learn from them as well as senior players.
Yeah, I mean, them two boys are cracking lads. I mean, their personalities are class. I get along really well with both of them, and both of them teach me things that I could probably work on, and they're role models to me in ways where they've scored so many goals that I just want to feed off them, and I kind of want to pick their brains at how I can get into positions in the box, because them two boys are like I say, prolific goal scorers. So if I can find any ways to improve my game through them, then it's just a bonus for me.
Your time here at Bromley has been really good so far from a perspective of watching you play. You made a brilliant impact when you came on for your debut against Scunthorpe, and then you opened your Bromley account at home to Dorking Wanderers in February. Really well taken goal. What are your memories of that?
Yeah, I was buzzing about that, just to get off the mark. I'd had a few games in and amongst it, and a few good performances, but I just needed that goal just to push it over the line. And on the day, I'd had a good game, and to top it off with a goal I was really happy with it, and all the boys were buzzing as well. So, and to get the win, it's made it even better.
And the fans seemed to really like you as well. I remember when we were at Eastleigh and you got subbed off, and the away end was singing your name. What message have you got to the fans?
Thank you. So far, I mean, we've still got a fair bit to go. We've got 9 games to go, and we will need every single one of you to help us drive us through and over the line towards the end of the season. You've been fantastic so far for me and for the team. So for that to carry on would mean the absolute world to all of us.
And finally, for you, what are your career aspirations?
I think as any footballer, I want to make it to the top. I want to make it into the Premier League. But thinking realistically, taking it step by step, whatever league I end up in this season, next season, the season after, just trying to play my best, just trying to keep the balance of determination and enjoyment in football. But my end goal would definitely be Premier League, Champions League, international, them big stages.
Sky's the limit, Charlie. Thank you so much for your time. It's been brilliant having you on today.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
Well, what an interview that was. Charlie spoke with a lot of maturity. It was great insight, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. And I was actually at that that game at Doncaster. I was in the away end watching Charlie's debut. And yeah, it was. I remember everyone was buzzing when he scored that opener because we knew how much he wanted it. And then from then on, he was on the bench a couple of times. I think he came on at Peterborough away. And I remember when he was recalled from Sutton and we expected him to be thrown straight in. Because I know that the manager at Lincoln rates him highly, but obviously I'm buzzing that he's here.
And little did you know that you'd then be doing a press release about him signing
here. I thought you were winding me up.
No, genuinely.
Thought you were winding me up.
No, I certainly wasn't.
Because I thought on the Saturday, he'll be starting for Lincoln.
No, and he'll be starting for Bromley. Well, actually, he came on, Bromley. Didn't he? But, he did, you know, that Scunthorpe game, we mentioned it in the interview, just a brilliant impact he had on the game, didn't he? Moving on then, thank you to Charlie for that. It was really great to sit down with him. We are making the trip to Yeovil Town tomorrow on Saturday the 25th of March. Kick-off 3 o'clock. Ticket information available on bromleyfc.co.uk. But you can still book your place on the supporters coach until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. That's Saturday morning. So do come along and join us. It's always a good laugh on the supporters coach. I'll be there. Josh will be there. So if you want to give us any abuse about this podcast, then that's the place to do it, right?
True. I think, right. So, obviously not tomorrow, but like a future one, maybe Oldham, maybe we could do the podcast from the supporters coach.
That'd be brilliant. How would we get all this equipment on there, though? It's the return of the clip-on mics.
It's probably going to have to be, yeah.
No, that's a brilliant shout, Josh, and I'm sure that's something that we'll look to do at some point soon. Ticket prices have been reduced for this game, haven't they, as well?
Yeah, non-league day.
It is. We're always away on non-league day. It's so annoying.
Well, to be fair, we had our own non-league day against Oldham, didn't we?
Yes, we did. That's true, actually. But on the actual non-league day.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time we were at home. I'm sure someone listening to this podcast will remember. But the prices are £10 for adults, £5 for concessions, and £1 for children. So come on down to Somerset, get behind the boys, and you never know what might happen.
Is it going to be nice weather? I've not checked.
Oh, that's a good question. You can never bet on British weather. However, if you are unable to go to the game, the supporters coach is leaving at 10 o'clock, by the way. Space is still available on that. It's £30 return. Brimfields will be showing the game. And from 12:30 to 1:30, it's 50% off drinks. And from 2 to 6 p.m., if you're wearing a Bromley shirt, you get 10% off your beer or wine order at the Brimfields Bar, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant that people can come here as well, those that might not be able to make the trip, and watch the game.
Yeah, well, obviously it's different for 3 o'clock kickoff. So because it's an international break, we're allowed to stream games. Like the 3 p.m. blackout doesn't matter. So
it's rare, isn't it? That?
Yeah. So obviously during the World Cup, we were able to do it as the streaming system was sort of in its trial period. Whereas, yeah, now it's international break again. We contacted the league, asked if we could do it, and we can. But, yeah.
Moving on then, just before we hear from Andy Woodman, a few further bits of news to bring you. We've got a new date for the trip to FC Halifax Town. That's Tuesday, the 18th of April, and that's a 7:45 kickoff. Don't forget, we're away to Maidstone United next Tuesday, the 28th of March. No tickets are available at the ground, is that correct?
Yes. No tickets available at the turnstile. Tickets must be purchased in advance online.
And of course, there is no supporters coach for that one, given that it's, 20, 30 minutes down the road.
I don't know how accurate this is, but I was told that there is a small chance that Maidstone could be relegated on Tuesday. I don't know how accurate that is, but I was told.
Well, it's been a really disappointing season for Maidstone, hasn't it? And obviously the change in manager recently, Hakan Hayrettin leaving after a few years in charge, and, you know, some relegations, some promotions, a bit of a mixed bag for him. He's now at Dulwich Hamlet trying to turn them around. But yeah, it's been a disappointing season. I think you look back to the game that we played earlier on in the season here at Hayes Lane, it was just no contest on the day. What you can always rely on Maidstone for, though, is vocal support. They get good crowds. They brought a great away following here to Hayes Lane, didn't they? It should be good atmosphere on Tuesday.
Yeah, hopefully.
Anyway, under-16s for that one must come in with a paying adult. And once again, because it's a Tuesday night fixture, it will be shown live in Broomfields. From 6.30 to 7.30, it's 50% off lager and wine at the Broomfields Bar. So again, if you can't make it down to Maidstone, do come on down and you can catch all the action in Broomfields from the comfort of our bar. Got a bit of player news, haven't we, as we do. And that concerns one, George Alexander.
Yeah, well, George Alexander has been recalled from Welling United and has been sent back out on loan to Slough Town, who are also in the National League South, and he even scored a hat-trick against them earlier on this season.
That was one of his first games as well. I think it was his second or third game.
We were at home that day, and I remember seeing it, and I was like...
It was a first-half hat-trick, wasn't it? I think it was all in the same half.
Yeah.
Absolutely outstanding. Good luck to George. He's got a challenge on his hands there. You know, Slough are fighting for their lives, but what a player to be able to bring in when you know you're trying to stay up in a division.
Yeah, definitely. I think he'll do well there.
Well, good luck to George, and we'll certainly keep tabs on his loan there. That is until the end of the season. That leaves us with one final piece and another guest. And of course,
The gaffer,
the regular guest on the podcast. He absolutely loves coming on, doesn't he?
He does, yeah.
Well, here's our catch up with Andy Woodman ahead of that trip to Yeovil Town on Saturday. Andy, so just reflecting on the Wrexham match last week, a really good performance on the day. We were really up against it. How would you reflect on the game as a whole?
Yeah, exactly that. I thought the performance was great. I think we got through the first 15 minutes, which we needed to. So we can't sort of just gloss over that didn't happen. They had a couple of big moments that they should have taken. But once we got through that, and I think we sort of, the nerves settled down for one or two of our players, I thought we'd give a really good account of ourselves. You know, I thought it was a really good game of football as well. I don't often say that when we get beat, but I actually enjoyed, I don't know if it was the football, the atmosphere, the occasion, I think it's probably all of it. And I enjoyed watching my team go toe-to-toe with arguably the best team that's ever been in the National League, I think we could say. So all of that put together, I was come away from there very proud of my football club and my football team.
Something else that was brilliant about the day was the crowd. Obviously, the great number, potentially a lot of people coming to watch Bromley for the first time. We also had two fans coming all the way over from California. The support was immense all round, wasn't it?
It was magic. I went away from the game and reflected that night, not only on the game, but I kind of reflected of why can't these people come most weeks? You know, how do we get them back? How do we, you know, I think our brand of football is good. I think, you know, we're an entertaining club. We're a whirlwind club. You know, we've got to get these people to come back and make sure they keep enjoying their experience here. Not only on a football terms, but off the pitch. And that's my message, you know, come back and try again and then again. And let's get those numbers up, because it was brilliant. I mean, it was brilliant all round. I thought it was a really great atmosphere for Bromley Football Club.
Another thing that was brilliant, two words, Deji Olerewey. I can't believe he's 19 years old. What a play we have on our hands and what a performance.
Yeah, we've been very, I won't use the word lucky, we've been very thorough since I've been here on the loan. And the loans we've had. So he's another one that is a real big tick box in our loans. Funny enough, I just read something about, it was about this time 2 years ago, I brought Alex Mitchell to the club. So Deji's come in and he's exciting, isn't he? I like him. I like his character. He's got a fantastic character. You can see that. Real smiley boy off the pitch. On the pitch, he's a warrior. I love him. So... he's been a real good addition to us. And I must say this, when I asked Deji, would he want to come? He didn't think about it. He wanted to come, just wanted to come play football. And he's come and he hasn't started from the off. He's been patient, he's trained well. And that's the sort of characters we want at Bromley Football Club or any football club. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to Deji and hopefully his time here can keep progressing every game.
And speaking of young players, 9 of the 22 players on Saturday were 22 or younger. How important is it for the young players to be thrown into an environment like that?
Well, important, it's good to expose them to it, and it's only good if you come out the other side and it hasn't been too damaging. I don't think any of us would have been sitting here today saying that was really important and we got beat 5 or 6 nil. But it's brilliant learning for them. I mean, brilliant learning for them. I mean, all of those boys were excellent. And I think, you know, Mike Sinner, I was so proud of the age and the group of players we put out against Wrexham that I don't really tweet or do any of that stuff, but I just wanted to shout from the rooftops, look, we've played Wrexham here, which is a team of seasoned pros in leagues much higher than we've ever been in or these boys have ever been in. And you know, look, we've narrowly got beat by sort of 2 moments of brilliance by them, you could argue, and a little bit of switching off by us. So I was extremely proud, and it is good learning for these boys. So, you know, all round, the experience was great for them.
And we didn't have a game on Tuesday, but James Fennings did. How proud are you of his call-up to England 6?
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. I think it recognises what a good football player James is. I know the England 6 probably gets a few eyebrows raised, but I think it's great, you know, for these boys to at this level to be recognised that, however you want to call it, England 6, League 11, that they're the best players in this league. And I think everyone wants to know they're part of the best in a league. My only question mark with that is that, you know, I think they should probably do a few more of those games throughout the season. And just the timing of that game, which is always right at the critical end of the season, you know, and I've seen one of the Gateshead players, he's out for the rest of the season for an injury for that game. And I think the implications of that game at this stage of the season could be massive, particularly for a club like Gateshead or any club. But, you know, that could cost them their status in the league, that injury. And that's something I'd like the National League people that put that game on to just really be mindful that this is the business end of the season for all of these clubs, top and bottom.
And moving on to Saturday, we travel to Yeovil. How are you and the team feeling?
Yeah, we've had a good week. I always say that, but we really have. The mood in the camp is pretty much like it's been all season. The guys they train hard, they work hard. I've got a real honest bunch of football players, and I can't ask no more than that. So we've been doing all our prep work. Yeovil isn't going to be an easy game because they're fighting for their lives. They've signed 2 or 3 players, so they'll be a different beast down there. And I always think Yeovil's a tough place to go. You know, it's just off the beaten track a little bit, but it's a club that's got good history at this level, and they've got a manager that's managed you know, a few levels. Mark Cooper, who I've had the fortunate time of playing with and under his dad. So it'd be a tough game, but I think we are really aware of the importance of this game and the next one. But let's not worry about the next one. Let's worry about this one first, and that's of high importance to us.
And of course, there's a bit of a buzz in Yeovil with the takeover happening. We reflect back on the match here in January, and it was one of the best performances on that day, a 4-1 victory. And quite honestly, on the day, could have been more.
Yes, but again, you can't sort of get away from that. 2 gilt-edged chances before we scored, so it could have quite easily been 2-0. I kind of don't want to be negative, but that's the margins of how games can go. So it was a brilliant performance. I'm not taking away from that. We've done really well that day and we played some brilliant stuff, really exciting. But I never sort of lose sight of they had some kind of big moments which we got away with that day, and other days we might not have. So we have to take this game very seriously. We can't suddenly think we're going down and we're just going to roll them over. We know better than any team in this league that doesn't happen from top to bottom. So, and like they say, they're fighting for their lives, and we're fighting for ours as well. Let's not get away from that. We've got something that we want to achieve. So it's going to be a big game for both clubs in different ways.
bit of a trek to Yeovil. There is a supporters coach going. Just how important has that... So we've talked about the support at home, but the support away from home has been equally as important on some pretty long journeys this season.
Yeah, I think I think I heard one of my players giving an interview. I can't remember who it was. And really sort of giving appreciation. I'm sure it's about the Torquay game. Where he was saying about it was brilliant to see our fans, but there wasn't many of them, but they were there. And we wanted to show our appreciation back to them. And that's us, you know. I mean, I think we pretty much know most of those fans that go away. They're religious every home and away, you know, home and away, they're here. But away, the away group's kind of a solid group. I think they must tell a few tales at home to just get out for the day. But they're brilliant, and we look forward to seeing them. And hopefully we can give them a similar sort of journey back that we did from Torquay.
Well, Andy, it's always a pleasure to catch up with you, and we'll speak to you more after the game on Saturday.
Thank you very much.
It's been another action-packed Ravens Weekly. Thanks to Andy for sitting down with us. He always has time for us, doesn't he?
He does.
And it's been great today, Josh. Thank you for joining me.
That's all right. I'm going to put a question forward, though, to the listeners.
Go on. Hang on. I think this deserves some kind of sound effect. Maybe this one.
No. Wrong button, Matt.
Okay, all right. We'll roll with it.
It's a joke. So, yeah, the question is, which player would you like us to interview next?
Oh, I like that. We used to do this in the very early days of the podcast, you know, what do people want?
Well, we're bringing it back.
We are. We're bringing it back.
Has to be a current player.
We're men of the people.
Unless it's Jack or Luke Coulson, it has to be a current player.
It could be Jack or Luke Coulson or a current player, ideally not one that we've had on in the past couple of weeks.
Or if they get sent off on Saturday or Tuesday, ideally not them.
How can people get in touch, Josh?
Tweet us at Bromley FC and with your player of choice.
You can even stick a hashtag on there if you want. Hashtag Ravens Weekly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Make it a bit snazzy.
Yeah.
Anyway. On that note, I think it's time for us to end now. Josh, thanks again for joining me today. And thanks to all of the guests. And of course, most importantly, thanks to all of you, the listeners. This is why we do it. And we hope you've enjoyed this episode today. Safe journey to those of you who are making the trips to Yeovil Town and Maidstone. A reminder, if you're not, you can catch the action live in Brimfield's Bar and Kitchen. And we look forward to seeing you, hopefully, back at Hayslay next Saturday, the 1st of April, as we take on Solihull Moors. Ticket information available on the website, bromleyfc.co.uk. Thanks once again, and we'll be back next week.
You could have been following the champions of the Champions League. You could have been. What's all this stuff you're giving us? There's just one team for me, and that's the town where I come from. You probably...